Hello, everyone, and welcome to MedHeadOSNet Podcast, Season 4, Episode 6. Thank you for joining us live on YouTube, Facebook, and X, and to all of you who are listening to us on your favorite podcast platform, we appreciate you tuning in. It's Thursday, December 14th, 2023. The year is almost over. I'm your host, Vic Aslanian, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Mr. Mike Balyan, where we discuss about our great Armenian history, covering different topics, eras, and people. Please hit that like button, make sure you are subscribed, and share with your friends and family. If you like what we are doing here at the MedHeadOSNet Podcast, please consider supporting us by going to patreon.com/MedHeadOSNet. That's patreon.com/MedHeadOSNet and become a Patreon and support the show. Today's episode is titled Echoes of Artsakh, Addressing Displacement and Protecting Cultural Identity. We have two special guests with us in the studio, Vigen Arabian and Edgar Agopian, who are the founding members of Support Our Heroes Armenia organization. We're going to have an in-depth discussion on the critical issue of addressing displacement and preserving the rich culture heritage of the Armenians of Artsakh. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you for being with us tonight.
Welcome.
Thanks for having us. Yeah.
How are you?
Good.
Good. Well, Vigen, you have been on the show before, and we had a very interesting conversation with you. You've dedicated your pretty much entire life to Artsakh. But before we get into it, you know, people who may not know about you, can you give us a quick, short bio about you, where you were born, where you're from, and then we'll go to Edgar, and then from there we'll start our conversation.
I'm the grandson of a Dikranagertsi. Grandfather Hovhannes was born in Dikranagert, Western Armenia. My dad was born in Syria. He was a son of a survivor of a genocide, and I was born in Lebanon, Beirut, and I grew up in Beirut, went to school in Beirut to and graduated from Nishan Balanjan Jemadan, and which was one of the most prominent Armenian schools in Beirut, and migrated to the U.S. when I was 19 years old, and lived in the U.S. for 20 years, and been living in Armenia for the past 18 plus years.
Okay,
that's as far as
that's a short bio
geographically. Yeah.
Okay, Edgar,
me. I was born in Armenia. Parents migrated from Iran in the 70s. Born in Armenia. I was 12 years old. Moved to LA. Been here since. It's been about 32 years. I'm here in LA, and the goal is to move back, which is a process. I know Vigen's complaining that it's taking too long. Building a house there, so hopefully it'll be done soon so I can move back.
Yeah, the construction process is a lot slower over there, right, than here.
Some stuff I make it slower too, but yeah.
Yeah, well, it's not easy. It's not easy to manage a project all the way, you know, from here. Can you guys tell us a little bit about how you guys came together and formed Support Our Heroes?
I know Vigen from actually construction because he was building a complex in Armenia, and I was looking into purchasing a property in Armenia. And after going visiting different builders, different people, a lot of people that, you know, promised big things, but I didn't see the future of it.
Yeah.
So finally I met Vigen. Actually, in the beginning it was very mean, but I realized why. But then we became friends. I purchased a property in the complex he was building, and since then we became friends. But I've been following him, doing the projects that he was doing, and eventually I became a board member also, basically, when we established the NGO, the nonprofit.
So when you say mean, did he start growing on you, or?
Well, it was a
I'm kidding.
It was like a process of, you know, dark room, lights on your face.
No, yeah. And I've been at the, well, when I was in Armenia, me and Vigen got to hang out. He showed me around, and I've seen that complex. It's a beautiful complex. He did an amazing job putting that together. But, you know, one of the reasons we wanted you guys to be on the show is obviously Vigen doesn't come to the States as often. So whenever you're here, we want him here. And you're always doing amazing projects over there with the Support Our Heroes organization. So, you know, today we want to talk about what took place in September 19th, everything that happened, and what you guys did, because a lot of people don't get to see the work that organizations like yourself that are doing. There's a lot of, I don't want to call them fake, but like, you know, organizations that claim they're doing this and doing that, but there's nothing behind it. They're just, you know, unfortunately they get to raise funds and you never see any type of an outcome from it. But you guys are always the silent ones who aren't out there promoting, but yet you're actually doing the work out there. And there's a few other organizations like yourselves, like Hike for Our Heroes and Veterans of Armenia, who are great guys. But to just start the conversation, can you guys give us an overview of the events on September 19th, when the Armenians of Artsakh were basically, you know, forced to leave their homes? And how did Support Our Heroes or you guys initially respond to the event? I mean, the minute it started.
First of all, we had throughout the blockade, we had several projects going on in Artsakh. We were sending supplies of various categories to different villages and towns in Artsakh. And it was very hard. It was very challenging. We had to be extremely creative, whether it was medication, medical supplies, or whether it was agricultural supplies, beehives, anything that would help the Artsakhis basically sustain their lives. And it became more and more challenging towards the past few months. And in September, starting in October, in August, we started working on a major project to supply firewood to various villages and towns in Artsakh, including the Mardaget area and the Shushi area, the four villages that were not occupied by the Turks yet. So that project took several weeks because the problem was getting diesel fuel and gas, and finally we were able to manage to get some certain quantities of fuel to be able to cut the trees down and bring them back to the towns, the firewood. But and we were just days away from getting all that done. And when the first bullet was fired on September 19th, I believe it was noonish when the war started, we were immediately notified. I mean, I got calls. And from that moment on until the next day, noon, I want to say 12 or 1 o'clock when fighting stopped, we were basically up all night. We were working with various volunteers of ours, helping coordinate the evacuation but not just the evacuation, but also trying to put people in touch, whether it was parents with their kids or various family members who had lost each other, and people who were on the front lines with their families. So we were trying to be the link between all these people. That lasted for several days, even after the fighting stopped on September 20th. And on the morning of the 21st, I visited some hotels in Yerevan early in the morning, and I knew there was going to be an exodus. We already knew that, although it wasn't announced yet, but so I went to three different hotels, talked to the managers of the hotels, trying to see what we can do just on an emergency basis. Couldn't make deals with anybody because it was way too expensive and not enough rooms and all that. So then one of our founding members and myself, Minas and I, basically drove to Goris that same morning on the 21st. We spent the night there. We made arrangements in Goris and Sisian to basically, you know, welcome people who were coming from Artsakh, who were going to come from Artsakh, but they hadn't even taken off yet. So we made a lot of arrangements for food and hotel accommodations. And then we came back. And then the very next morning, I went back to Goris and stayed for the next 7 days. And we had friends and volunteers in various areas of Armenia, including Goris, including Sisian, Vayotzor, Regnadzor, Yerevan, obviously. And we were basically in touch throughout the whole time, every time somebody was taken off from Mardagert to come to Stepanakert, for example, we were in touch with them as much as possible. I mean, phone connection was horrible. Very little phone connection, very little internet connection. So, but still, we managed to help as much as possible. So we were, in effect, remotely on the ground, coordinating, you know, when people were arriving from various regions of Artsakh to Stepanakert, before they took off from Stepanakert. We actually made arrangements for hundreds of people to be to be placed in homes temporarily for a night or two. And it was cold, and it was getting cold already, and their kids and all. So we did all that for three, four days until the exodus started. So when they started leaving Artsakh, we were in touch with every single family, every single member of family, and we basically were following their, you know, from Medshen on, from the villages of Shushi, Medshen, Hinshen, between Medshen and Hinshen, we were completely cut off. There was no communication at all until they crossed the border. So we're talking about a 90 kilometers, so what, a 65-mile, 70-mile drive. And for some people, it took 35, 36 hours. Others, it took 42 hours. So the minimum I've seen, it was 36 hours, roughly.
Wow.
So we're talking, literally a day and a half of travel with very little food in the car, extremely uncomfortable. Under the threat of,
you never know.
Yeah. You just never know. After 10 months of total blockade, after having been starved, and everybody was weak and they had lost a lot of weight. And after all of that, after the war, many had, losses in their families. So after all that, I mean, I had one of my friends who's the mayor of Sarnakhbir, a village in Askeran. Imagine their extended family of 20, basically four families. They're all in their, I'd say, mid-30s. So young families with kids, three, four, five kids. Gadik, who's the mayor of Sarnakhbir, his father and his 15-year-old son were killed in front of his eyes on September 19th when the village was taken over within minutes. And he was, he basically spent 38 hours on the road from Stepanakert to Goris with his son's coffin in the car ahead of him. And they drove for 36 hours with his father's and son's coffins in with them. And then they got to Goris. And they got to Goris like 5 o'clock in the morning, and I was waiting for them. And we basically didn't sleep for a week. I was maybe during the day we slept for a couple, 3 hours on and off here and there and on chairs. But we had people getting to Goris all the time, arriving in Goris just almost all day, 24 hours a day. I mean, that's the kind of situation these guys were in. So they called me from the morgue. They were sitting on the street, on the pavement, literally outside the morgue. They didn't want to leave the morgue because his son and father were inside. And they spent a couple of hours there, and then I was made arrangements for them to come to Yerevan and found a place in Yerevan for them to stay, all 20 of them, and they're still staying there today. It's an empty hotel that was built, brand new hotel that was not being used as a hotel. That belonged to a dear friend of mine, Hurayr Nalbandian, whose family was funding the construction of the soldiers' home in Stepanakert. So we were actually building the soldiers' home under dedicated to Hurayr Nalbandian in Stepanakert. And so that same Hurayr Nalbandian, our dear friend, it's so funny, it's so interesting that he served his country even after passing away. He passed away 3 years ago, so we dedicated the soldiers' home to him. And so the hotel he had built in Jurvesh in Yerevan actually served 20 Artsakhis, and they're still living there today. And Hurayr's brother and sister and sister's family and brother's family who live in L.A., they were graciously, gave the hotel to my friends so we've been helping these guys and close to probably 350 Artsakhis, over 75, 80 families. Every one of them has a story, a unique story on their own. And so we basically, welcomed every single one of them. We fed them in Goris. They stayed for one or two nights in Goris or Sisian, where we had a hotel also, a complete hotel. Then we sent them to various parts of Armenia, whatever and whenever we could. We were scrambling, talking to everybody. Basically, I was on the phone 20 hours a day trying to find places for these people to stay. We often had to basically drive to the entrance of Gori's to basically meet them because they didn't know where to go in Gori's, and they would get lost. Many of them had never been to Yerevan, or maybe once or twice. And imagine, these are people from, you know, various parts of Artsakh who basically left Artsakh. Maybe they went to Stepanakert once a year. So they were very much localized in their lives. And
I wanted to ask you, when obviously, you know, you're talking about over 100,000 people coming over to Armenia. The families you guys are helping, is this something that you've worked with them before? Is it certain towns that you guys have been doing projects, so you know them, so immediately you were able to kind of, you know, obviously there's other organization helping other people out, but how was there anything random, or you guys just already knew these people? How were you like able to connect with them?
One of the things that's very unique about us, and I've always said this, is, and everyone recognizes this, is that every single soul, Artsakhti, that we've helped and we help today, and this isn't just about September 19th or the aftermath of September 19th, every single soul that we are assisting and helping rebuild their lives are basically people that are we close to. So these are not just people we've
There's
met.
A relationship between.
Yeah.
Okay.
It goes back years. Some of them goes back, you know, 10, 15, 20 years. I've been doing work in Artsakh for 25 years now. Yeah. So some of these families go back many, many years. Many of them are my personal friends. You know, you make friends when you...
Of course.
Go to Artsakh every 2-3 weeks for 25 years, you know, you meet people. So you end up creating a whole, you know, society of people that feel dear to you, and you're same to them. So so we basically... our risk level of whether our help, our assistance is targeted correctly, and whether we're helping people who really need the help, and whether those people are getting that same help from other sources, we know that's not the case. We know they need our help. We know that they are not getting that help. So whatever we're doing today, and we have been doing for years, but also today, is very much to the point. So we're very, very effective at what we do. That's not to say that everybody else who's not getting help from us doesn't deserve our help. We do what we have to do, and this has been our style because we have the benefit of being on the ground in Artsakh for years and knowing hundreds of people. So we're barely keeping up with helping those people because we're not just...
Well, also the resources that it takes to help these people, you know, that's not easy. I mean, you know, we all wish we had unlimited amount of resources where we can help everybody out. But, you know, luckily there are other organizations who are, you know, helping, again, that you're talking about over 100,000 people.
Multiple fronts.
Yeah. I want to thank everyone who's joining us live on YouTube, Facebook, and X. If you guys have any questions as we're having this conversation, feel free to ask in the chat, and we'll go from there. But one of the main reasons is, you know, we also want you guys to help support our heroes. If you guys see the ticker in the bottom, if you guys want to help, you know, with any type of amount, to this amazing organization that is doing great work in Armenia for all the displaced families that they're working with from Artsakh. You can go to supportourheroes.am, right?
If correct.
Correct? Yes. Yeah. And then also, if you guys see the QR code on the screen, you can go ahead and scan that QR code. It'll take you directly to the donate page, and you can donate. And again, any small amount is appreciated. It is the holiday season, and we want to, and I know you guys have some projects for the holidays for the Artsakhtis in Yerevan, I believe on the 20th. We'll talk about that. You know, to help, especially the kids, you know, we want to put smiles on their faces. So, we would appreciate if you guys can donate any amount that you feel from your heart, you know, is worthy of this cause. So,
you know, you talked about the response. Let's talk about ongoing efforts, right? Since the initial crisis in September, what efforts have you guys been going through and continuing to go through to support some of the displaced Armenians from Artsakh? And I guess I'll ask my follow-up question after you guys are done.
Well, first and foremost, our goal is not to provide financial assistance per se. We are basically, our goal has been and continues to be making Artsakhis who have arrived in Yerevan or other parts of Armenia, making them feel comfortable, making them feel at home. And if it takes helping them financially, if it takes giving them, if it takes giving them kitchen appliances, we're doing that. If it takes giving them paying for their rent, we're doing that. We have over 50 families we're paying for rent for 6 months. So we're evaluating every single family individually. And we're, because we know these people, we know what their needs are, we know what their capabilities are, and we even know how much money they have. So we know what they can do in terms of work. So we're finding them jobs. We're basically, we're not doing the blanket assistance where, you know, you just give out, hand out, whatever. We're not doing that. Yeah. We've never done that. And we're not doing that today. So we're talking to these people. We're engaged with them. We're literally, I mean, every single day I talk to at least 10, 20 Artsakhis. You know, it's amazing. And I spend all day talking to these people and I'm meeting with them. And if I don't talk to one of the Artsakhis for maybe 4 or 5 days, they call me and say, hey, the kids are saying where's Weekend Zaza? You know, I mean, that's the way it is. I get these WhatsApp messages complaining that I haven't talked to them for a week because they called me and I couldn't answer and I forgot to call them back for a week, just a week.
That's awesome.
So that's the kind of, we're basically in their families. We've been in their families for years. These aren't people we just met.
Yeah.
So we are basically doing what's needed to recreate their lives. And that could entail financial assistance for rent. Mm-hmm. It is entailing financial assistance for rent. It is entailing good, high-quality appliances for their kitchens. It is entailing complete furnishing of their homes, including beds and tables and couches and everything. We're doing
essentials.
We're just recreating whatever they lost. And it's hard because it's not just financial resources. It's also a lot of human resources.
Yeah.
So it's taking a toll on all of us. And it's not just talking to these people, but seeing their misery, seeing their hardship, that's extremely, it's hard to keep a straight face with these guys because it's you see all that, and you know many of them have lost their husbands and their sons, and so sometimes you don't know what to tell them, what to say to them, and how to respond because they have good days and bad days, and our job is to be there for them first and foremost, and if part of being there is to support them financially, we're doing that. If it's to help them find jobs, we're doing that. If it's help them arrange their paperwork, their legal paperwork, we're doing that. So we're doing everything humanly possible just to make sure these guys never feel alone. Because first and foremost, they're in their homeland. Yes, it is not the part of the homeland that they should be in.
It's not their lifelong home.
No, but they're still there in their homeland. And secondly, we don't want them to even think about leaving Armenia and going to Russia or somewhere else. And yes, some are leaving. And it's very sad. It's very unfortunate. But, you know, we can't stop them. But I've already had several friends leave for Russia. And but we're doing everything possible to basically give hope to these guys. And that's what we're doing. That's what we've been doing.
Now, let's talk about some of the success stories or any ongoing success stories that you guys have had ever since the response and some of the continuing efforts that you guys have.
You know, Mike, I want to say almost every single story. I can't think of one that has not been a success because we're systematically working with these people. I mean, we're every single day. I mean, I've been here in the U.S. for a week now and almost all every night, you know, all night I'm in touch with people. They're sending me, I'm preparing contracts. I'm sending them contracts. They're sending me home addresses. I got to go home tonight and send 4 different families, 3 different appliances, each one. And we have basically we bought all the appliances. We got 60 sets of appliances that we purchased, good quality appliances. And I just send that manager of that store, which is the largest appliance store in Armenia, I just send him the message on WhatsApp, you know, the person's name, phone number, address. And then within 3 working days, they deliver appliances. And then I got to send people to go ahead and install those appliances. If it's something that's, you know, if it's a widow, last night, I had appliances delivered 3 days ago to a widow with 2 teenage daughters. And she didn't tell me, but yesterday I got mad at her. I said, why aren't you telling me? Apparently she hasn't been using the appliances except for the refrigerator, the washing machine and the cooktop and oven. She hasn't been able to use them because we just rented a new home for her literally a week ago. So she's been living in the new home. It's all furnished now. It's fully furnished by us. and she cannot use the washing machine and the oven and the cooktop because she doesn't know who to call. She leaves home and she gets lost. She's in Djurgovec. So it's that kind of person. These are such nice people. They're so humble. She's not even calling me. She knows I'm in the U.S. She's not bothering me. She goes, I didn't want to bother you. I said, what, you're going to live without the cooktop? You're not drinking coffee? You got kids, you know. Just so immediately this morning in Armenia, literally in the next hour or two, I've already made arrangements. Someone's going to go make the installation, do the work. So we luckily have all these connections. So I've been living in Armenia for so long, so we can help these people. Even if they're not a widow, it doesn't matter, most Artsakhis don't have connections. They don't know who to call if the water heater doesn't work or if there's a problem, any kind of assistance. So we've been holding their hands like our brothers and sisters. We truly are doing that.
Yeah.
And yes, part of the entire package is also major financial assistance. So, we're providing a lot of financial resources to that also, to whether it's renting homes or appliances or complete furnishing of their homes. Some homes we've furnished, we've spent 10,000 arts for one home because they're, the guy has six kids and he's got a home and he doesn't have anything at all. And the kids have to go to school and they're going to school and they need desks and they need, they need everything, mattresses. So, we got to do what we got to do. Yeah. I mean, we don't want them to think that, and our motto has always been, if we're going to, whatever we provide, whatever assistance we provide, whether it's furniture or appliance or anything else, if we are not ready to bring that appliance into our home, then we would not provide it
to the Artsakhis. Yeah.
We would not. Cause so we're not going the cheap way. We're doing whatever we're doing. And they're seeing that. And I can hear the feedback from different people, different places. And they're amazed because they're not used to that. Normally, the help they get, and even when they were in Artsakh, if it was government assistance or other NGOs sometimes, they would get the cheapest of the cheapest. And whatever they can get, a year or two later, it doesn't work anyway. So my point is, we shouldn't treat Artsakhis as beggars or as people who just, this isn't about numbers. This is about creating quality of life for these people.
Yeah.
And they need to see that. Then they will see that. When we do what we do, they see it. Even if they don't say something, they, in their heart, they appreciate what we do and they will never forget it. And they will feel that they're at home. So if they're in trouble, which they are, they will not be left alone because they're in Armenia. If they go to Russia, if they go to somewhere else, they could be left alone. They might be left alone.
Good point.
We not also, in Armenia.
That's a very good point.
Well, I mean, we also don't want them going outside of, because the ultimate goal is for these people eventually, one way or another, to go back to their homeland. So if they end up leaving and going to Russia, France, even to the states, whatever it is, what's going to happen is they're going to, get comfortable there. They're going to move on with their lives. And then when the time comes, most likely they're not going to return.
Go back,
But when we talk about success stories, we have some videos we want to show you guys of a few of the families you guys have helped. So I think this one is the one from Aravnadzor, I believe. So let's go ahead and watch this. So these are some of the homes, right? That you guys rented for them?
Yeah. Armina is a widower. Her husband is a martyr of the 2020 war.
Okay.
She has two kids, Narek, 12 years old, and Nare, 10 years old. The sweetest kids in the world. I love these kids. And we purchased a home for her, completely furnished it. I got her a job in Mardagert. So for the past 3 years, we've been working with Armina. And we did everything for her. We even got her a TV and furniture and everything. And she got a new home. And this was right after the war, the 2020 war. And obviously she lost everything again, but she hasn't lost hope because we're standing by her side. And she herself, her brother David, and her mother and the two kids, Narek and Nare, they're going to school in the Avnadzor, which is one of the Eregnadzor and Areni area villages. And she loves it. She's comfortable. She's always sending me pictures. I talked to her last night. 2 days ago, we were finally able to get gas into the home. This is a rented home that we're renting for her. And it took 2 months to get the gas into the house. But we finally were able to. I pulled a lot of strings with the gas company. And, it's hard to... A lot of bureaucracy.
Course, yeah.
But we were able to get it. you know, to get that gas into their home. Now, and we also gave her, 2 weeks ago, we gave her a gas heater, so which is in the middle of the home, and also electric heaters. So she's all set. We gave her everything. So, but she's only set financially. She's only set physically. But we're going to remain with her. We're going to keep working and be in touch with her forever.
You mentioned something about as far as, you know, the biggest issue is it's not just, you know, giving them apartment or a, you know, the gas and this. They need to work, right? Mm-hmm. So some place like Alavnadzor, is there work available, or do they need to travel outside of Alavnadzor to a local, like more of a populated city to work?
Alavnadzor is a large village. It's a really nice village. I love that. I love that village.
But we used to vacation in Alavnadzor when I was a kid in Armenia. So really? I know Alavnadzor really well, but yeah, you know, it is a village, as far as, I don't know how much work there is, to do. That's why I was asking the question.
I think in a village like Alavnadzor there is. I was careful not to put her in a village that, after everything she's gone through for several years, I wasn't going to send her to a village where, you know, a small village where there's nothing going mm-hmm. on. She would have been more depressed than she was already. So she went through a lot of pain. Even in 2020, after 2020, on September 19, she was on a bus. She arrived in Gorice on a bus. And I brought her to my home personally, and then she stayed with us for two nights with her kids and brother and mother. And then we took her to Alavnadzor until I found the place, and we moved her out there. And so she is right now volunteering at the local school, and she also wants to continue her studies, and she's studying accounting. She was studying accounting in Artsakh, remotely from Mardaghet to Stepanaghet. She's from Mardaghet. So we're hoping in January, she's going to continue her studies, third year. And then she's also volunteering in the local school. She's an active lady. I know she likes where she is and she's comfortable. And, you know, the pain is still there. Every time I walk into her house, picture of her husband is on the wall. Yeah. And it reminds them that, she paid a lot.
I mean, I personally have never been to Artsakh. I unfortunately never got to go because, like I said, it was the first time I went back to Armenia. Yeah, sure. It was this summer. But most of Artsakh towns are villages, right? They're into our agriculture and farming and so forth. So places like Alavnadzor or any of those, I think it might feel more comfortable, right? Rather than being in that busy or Yerevan city center, like, you know,
urban life,
urban fast paced.
I think Vegan can say it too. Like, we have families that are in apartments because we had to rent it, but they're like, this is not our lifestyle. We need, like, we want to deal with cattle. We want to deal with, you know, farming.
Of course.
So obviously at the moment, currently, because of the, you know, the resources and the timing, it's just like we have to give them housing so they can live.
Of course,
the next three, 6 months. But down the road, I mean, there's going to be different goals that we're going to have to come up with different families to see how we're going to settle them into different places where they'll be more comfortable.
Yeah.
Because it's not like we, like I said, we don't have unlimited resources. We have to do it in a way where after they're settled into their home, they can take care of themselves.
Yeah.
You know, then we can just visit them and be happy about that. But we cannot just constantly give them money. And
because I mean,
that's not going to work.
Budgeting is important. Plus, you don't want to strain your finances where all of a sudden, you know, you're not able to do anything.
Yeah.
You know, that's the worst thing. Let's show another video. I believe this one is the family from Sushi, right?
No. Gena is from Talish.
Okay.
The Talish Etsy.
Okay.
And he'll tell you the story.
Սարգսյաների 5 հոգանոց ընտանիքը սեփական հայրենիքում սեփական տանը ապրելու համար տարիներ շարունակ պայքար է մղել։ Սկզբում Թալիշում, հետո Մատաղիսում, վերջում էլ Մարտակերտ քաղաքում։
Three regions.
Displaced three times.
Wow.
2016 թվականին Թալիշի տեղանալուց հետո ծրագրային ժամանակով Ռադաշան տեղամասում 19 թվականին տեղափոխվել եմ ծառայության բերում Մատաղիսի սպայական շենքեր, 20 թվականին պատերազմից հետո մանդարսից եմ տեղահարել Մարտակերտ քաղաք, հիմա էլ Մարտակերտի Ստեփանոցի։
Արցախից մեր ծնից բերել ենք հեռուստացույցը, համակարգիչը և մանելմունը պահանցի պարականը, մեկ էլ մեր հագուստը։
I mean, it happened so fast.
17 տարի Արցախի պաշտպանության բանակի շարքերում է ծառայել Գենան։ 2016-ին, 2020-ին, 2023-ին Ճշնամու հետ կռիվ տվել, որ Արցախում հասակարն են իր և Ռուզաննայի զավակները. 10 տարեկան Լիլիան, 7 տարեկան Արենն ու 4 տարեկան Ավետը։ Երկուազարսանի պատերազմի հետևանքով տեղահանձվելուց հետո սատարենք մեր հերոսներին բարեգործական հասարակական կազմակերպությունը ընտանիքի համար Մարտակերտում տուներ գնել ու կահավորել, կանգնել Արցախում ապրել պատրաստվող Գենայի ու իր նմանների կողքին։
This is the home we purchased for them and furnished.
As you can see.
That's the home in Armenia.
No,
Մարտակեր. Բարձրորակ սառնարան, փուր գազօջախ, լվացքի մեքենա, ներքնակներ, վերմակներ, սպիտակեղեն տրամադրել ու նորից ապրեցրել ամեն ինչ կորցրած, բայց ապրելու հույսը երբեք չկորցնող այս ընտանիքին։ Երեք անգամ տուն կորցնելուց հետո բազմաբնակարան շենքերից հեռու մի փոքրիկ գյուղում նորից իրենց սեփական տունն ունենալու մասին են երազում, որոշել են մնալ հայրենիքում,
շնացնել
հայրենի հողը. That's so important.
That right there is so important, is to give him that motivation to, as much as, you know, Artsakh is their home, you know, but to still stay in Armenian lands, you know. Artsakh obviously has always been Armenia, will always be part of Armenia. You know, I think what you guys are doing is also motivating them to stay in Armenia. That's the important part.
So they have the feeling to know that there's somebody to back them up, to be there when they need.
Yeah, they're not left alone. Yeah.
I believe there was another video we wanted to show, which is, let me go ahead and bring this up on the screen. Is this the gentleman from
Gevorke is a soldier from Shushi.
Shushi, yeah.
He participated in the 2016, 2020 and 2023 wars.
27 տարեկան է Գևորքը։ Կյանքի 24 տարիներն անցել են Շուշիում, վերջին 3 տարին Ասկերանի շրջանի Խնձրիստան գյուղում։ Երկուազարկսանդվականի օգոստոսի 23-ին է ամուսնացել Զարինեի հետ։ Հայկական Շուշիում կառուցած իրենց տանը հասցրել ապրել ընդամենը 34 օր։
Միանոցել էին սասատել ու այնչվանալ, ամորվացել դե չնքացել Զարինեի։ Հետո տեղափոխեցի գյուղում ընդինստան,
Երկու տարեկան Արթուրն ու 6 ամսական Անուշը ծնվեցին 2020-ի պատերազմից հետո, արդեն Խնձրիստանում։ Տասը տարի ծառայել է պաշտպանության բանակի շարքերում, հարազատների, հայրենակիցների, տանը իրեն սպասող զավակների համար ամենից առաջ եղել զինվոր խրամատ դարձած հայրենիքում։ Արցախում շարունակ հրադադարի ռեժիմի խախտումներ էին ու խախտվում էր ամեն օր խաղաղություն տնչացող արցախցու առօրյան։ Երկու ժամվա ճանապարհն անցել են երկու օր, ասել Երևան ու այստեղ հասկացել, որ մենակ չեն։ Կատարենք մեր հերոսներին բարեգործական հասարակական կազմակերպությունը առաջին իսկ օրվանից ու մինչ օրս Գևորգի ընտանիքին ապահովում է կացարանով։ Մեկ ամիս մնացել են Ջրվեժում, հետո տեղափոխվել Պրոշյան համայնք։
Մենք մեզ հետ ոչ մի բան չենք վերցել, ի երեխաների ու մեր շորերն ենք վերցել։
Սատարենք մեր հերոսներին բարեգործական հասարակական կազմակերպության միջնորդությամբ Պրոշյան համայնքում գտնվող Լոս Անջելեսը հայ Շանթ Մինասի տանը մեկ հարկի տակ 16 հոգի է հավաքվել։ Ապրում են առանց վարձավճարի, անվճար։ Ու անգինը մարդկային հոգատարությունն ու ստացած ջերմությունը։ Կյանքի տված հարվածներից հետո փորձում են ոտքի կանգնել։ Սեպտեմբերի 25-ին վարելիքի պահեստում տեղի ունեցած պայթյունի ժամանակ վիրավորված Գևորգը այսօր ծառայության է անցել Հայաստանի Հանրապետության զինված ուժերում։ Հայրենիքի իրեն վստահված սահմանը անարգ է, վստահեցնում եմ։
Gevork and his brother-in-law were there when the explosion happened. He was injured. He was looking much better in this video because this is a newly shot video. But when he first arrived, he was in pretty bad shape. His face was unrecognizable.
Wow.
And his brother-in-law, Zarine's brother, was basically not only killed but just in pieces.
Oh my
so we
God.
Went to his funeral, to Arthur's funeral in Yerevan. And... So Zarina's two other brothers are living with them with their families now, so that you can, the extended family you see there of 16 people is them. So yeah.
I want everyone, I mean, you guys are seeing these videos. The reason we're showing is for you guys to see what they are, what support our heroes is doing in Armenia, helping these Artsakh families. Again, the goal is to support them in a way where they can get back on their feet, and these people don't want to sit there and collect welfare, you know, but in order to be able to get back on your feet, everybody needs help. Everybody needs some kind of a backing for them to find a job, start even a business. Like I said, a lot of the Artsakhis are into agriculture, farming, and they want to be able to do that. So by helping organizations like Support Our Heroes by donating, all these funds are going directly to these to help these families to at least for the next few months be able to have a place. So like you said, he already started serving for Armenia, right?
Yep.
There you go. No time wasted. He could have easily said, you know, no, especially after being injured, burned from that explosion. But look at these people. These people aren't they're not here to get a handout. They're here because they were forced to leave their land. All we need to do is support them to get back on their feet. And then time will tell what happens. But I, in my heart, I know that we will liberate our lands again, one way or another. That's my personal opinion, but we'll talk about that later. But also, I know one of the other main reasons why you guys want to raise a significant amount is to help one of the soldiers that was injured during the 2020 war, right? Do you want to talk about him a little bit?
Yeah. Meher Hayrian is a high-ranking officer of the Artsakh Defense Army. He was part of the contingency who was trying to re-liberate Shushi on the morning of November 8th. And him, along with two of his brothers in arm, were on their way to Shushi, and they were fired upon. And his two friends, soldiers, were killed. He was badly injured, very badly injured. He was in a coma for, I'd say, six to seven months in Asrik Medical Center in Yerevan. And then he was operated on during that time on his arm, on his head. Basically, one third of his head was smashed. I mean, it was just unimaginable how he survived all that. There was no hope. I mean, the doctors basically said there's very little hope he'll live, let alone live normally, let alone you know, open his eyes or eat anything or just come back to society. And you know, I've seen resilient people in my life before, and Meher is definitely at the top of the list. This guy, in the past 3 years, has proven to all of us that you can fight. You can fight in the worst conditions of life and come back. And he did. And he's coming back. And earlier this year, when the government funds dried up, because he's been going medical treatment, rehab treatment in Moscow, in the best rehab center in Russia. And so we helped finance the past 6 months of his treatment. Mm-hmm. But as of 2 weeks ago, he's back in Yerevan because, you know, it's basically 12 hours a day of treatment of rehab. It's really hard on him, wow, too. So now he's back in Yerevan. We're all happy to see him. And in about 3 months, he's going to go back to Russia and continue his treatment. And there is no funds right now. The funds we provided, basically, we're all spent, and him and his wife are going to go back. His two sons, and basically two sons' families, are in Yerevan. Obviously, they were displaced on September 20th. They both participated in the wars in 2016, 20, and 2023. Mm-hmm. They were in Stepanakert on the front line in 2023, September. So that's the kind of family we're talking about. They're from Hadrut, and they lost their home in Hadrut.
Sorry, let me.
They came to Stepanakert. They were, you know, basically forced to evacuate Hadrut first week of October in 2020. Lost everything. Came to Stepanakert, lived there, and him and his wife were basically transported to Yerevan, and then they went to Moscow for treatment. So, his kids continued to live in Artsakh. They didn't come to Yerevan even after all that until September 19th. They were in Artsakh and they participated in the war again. So that's the kind of family we're talking about here. These guys deserve the best. They're the best, and they deserve the best.
Yeah.
And I think we owe it to them. I mean, this is, people might think, you know, we're investing, we're spending a lot of money on one person. Absolutely we are. And that one person represents everything good about us. And we need to make an example. We need to show to our kids that we stand by our soldier. And this guy has been a career soldier. I mean, he was a volunteer in the 1990s. Basically joined the army after the war ended in 1994. Until then, he was a volunteer fighting on the front lines, and then he went up the ranks. He's been a high-ranking army officer for the past 25 years. I mean, the guy is an exemplary Armenian, exemplary Artsakhtsi. And who else are we going to help? If we're not going to help him, who else are we going to help? So we owe it to him. We owe it to ourselves. We owe it to our kids, to our new generation, to save people like Meher, and we will. And we need everybody's help. I got to tell you, we need some serious funds because it's expensive to do rehab in the best rehab center in Russia. Mm-hmm. And it would be even more expensive in the U.S., obviously. But that's what the families decided to do. And they did spend some time in the rehab center in Armenia and the soldiers' home in Armenia. And they decided to take him to Russia, and that's their call, their decision. And we support their family, his family, his wife, anyway, you know, Irina, anyway we can and any way she decides. So
yeah.
we're standing by him, by his side, and we need people's help to be able to fund his upcoming rehab yeah. work. So
yeah. I've been to the soldiers' home in Armenia. They do a good job, but you know, excellent again, it's a personal choice. But obviously, yes. his condition was very yeah, severe. So here's a picture of with Vigen, with Mahed. So everyone who's watching, who will be watching, who's listening, the link is in the body of the video. It'll be in the body of the podcast on your podcast platform that you listen to. You know, it's the season of giving, so whatever amount you can. We understand right now in the U.S. there's a fatigue. A lot of people are financially struggling or being very conservative. We understand that we're all in the same boat. Doesn't matter what income level you're in, but you know that $5 you might spend on a Starbucks coffee or anything of that sort, you can donate and help every amount. You know, if we have 100 people at $5, you got $500 that yeah. would help with something. You know, whatever you guys can do, donate and help this great organization, help them help Mahed to get back on his feet. You know, he's when you talk about heroes, these are the heroes who fought for Artsakh and those who unfortunately, you know, didn't make it. You guys are helping their families, their children to have a good future, their sons, their daughters, you know. But going back to the conversation, looking ahead, what are some of the plans that you guys have in the next, let's say, 12 to 24 months? Continuing the support for these displaced families. What is the agenda? Do you guys have some kind of plan? What are you planning? Can you guys talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. First of all, the circle of help, the circle of Artsakhis is basically enlarging itself every day. So we're on a daily basis, we're adding one or two or three more families on a daily basis. So there are a lot of families out there that we know quite well that we've helped in the past, that but we just haven't been able to get to all of them because yeah. of both financial and human resources. And but we just cannot let, you know, leave these people alone. So we are basically enlarging our scope of work. We're also enlarging the number of people we're helping. And in terms of housing, I mean, we're taking care of temporary housing for 6 months. But we're basically waiting for the government we're waiting to see what they're going to do, what they're going to offer, and whether it's certificates or vouchers to buy homes. Those vouchers, from what we know, will be a higher dollar voucher or higher number based on the number of kids, number of members in the family, but also based on whether there's a man in the house, or whether they've had a murder in the house in the family, also based on where they buy the house from. So if you buy the house from in Vartanis, you'll get more money.
Yeah.
So it's going to be an incentive program like that. So we're kind of sort of following what they're discussing and what they're going to be approving. We hope it's going to be a good plan, but I got to tell you, we don't have a lot of hope that it's going to be enough for the Artsakhis. So, and we also, from past experience from 2020, it's going to be implemented extremely slow and extremely inefficiently and bureaucratically. And so, unfortunately, we'd love to think that the plan is going to be put into place on January 1st, and it's going to be a perfect plan, and everybody's going to get their homes in the next few months, and that's it. Everybody's problem is going to be solved, at least housing problem. But I don't anticipate that to happen. And in fact, I anticipate Artsakhis to be without homes for several years to come. So we want to make sure we're there, whether it's by supplementing what the government is doing or by taking care of families. For example, there's a family we're taking care of right now, 5 kids. The father was killed in 2020. Mother was already, you know, had passed away prior to that of illness. They're total orphans. The eldest, the only one who's over 18, is a 19-year-old daughter the daughter, and everybody else, all the other kids are kids, all the way down to 4 years old, and they're by themselves in Yerevan. They don't know what to do. We're basically taking care of them, including housing and everything, furniture, appliances. But that's the kind of families we're talking about. And his father, he was killed although he had been a volunteer, he was killed not during action. So because he was not killed during action, the government is not assisting. So there's a lot of cases like that too. So if he had been killed in action, the government would have given his family assistance. It's basically 10 million dirham, which is $25,000 to one shot. But because he wasn't killed in action on that day, his kids are not getting anything at all.
Wow.
So governments cannot be passionate in that sense.
I mean, the stipulations, like what?
Well, that's the program. So it's bad. It's really bad. To me, it makes no difference where, we failed these people. The government failed these people. Our government failed to protect them, failed to protect their belongings, their homes, failed to protect their pride. And as a nation, we failed. It's not just the government of Armenia, but all of us failed. So that's first and foremost, we have to remember that we owe it to them. This isn't about charity. No, it's not charity. People ask me, people tell me, thank you. People tell me, you guys are doing charity work. We appreciate what you do. We tell them, no, this isn't charity. We owe it to you. We literally do owe it to them. All of us do. All four of us in this room owe it to these people. Because we failed them. It was our responsibility to keep Artsakh. It was our responsibility to keep them alive, and we didn't. And if they lost their home, now we owe them a new home. It's that simple. And that new home in a different part of Armenia is never going to be the same home, because it's not going to be in Talish and Mardagerd and Marduni and Askeran. And we know that too. But at least physically, they'll have a home. They'll have a roof on their head, over their head. So my point is, we failed, and we need to at least try and make up for some of that, for part of that failure. We can't make up for all of it. We know that. We can't bring the martyrs back. We know that. But we need to stand by their side and try and, to a large extent, recreate their lives.
Yeah. As far as strategies, have you guys come up with some kind of a plan to or expand on it for the future, some kind of a where... Let's say if people are donating, certain donations will go for these programs. Like you said, the government has programs, unfortunately, only if you're killed in action. But are you guys planning to come up with some kind of strategy where certain families will get certain type of assistance, whether it be financially or material stuff, anything, any type of program you guys are working on?
Yeah, several programs. One of them is going to be the agricultural program. We're waiting for the spring season to open, and we've already been talking to over 40-50 families now, where we're going to basically give them beehives, we're going to give them cows, we're going to give them pigs. So we're kind of sort of getting prepared for all
getting
that
started.
And these are people, we're talking about tractors, getting them tractors. So we want to bring these people back into their normal way of life, which is agriculture, which is livestock, which is, and they're everywhere in Armenia. They're located in different villages of Armenia. So we are planning on doing that. We will be doing that. We're also planning on establishing various businesses. We're talking to various Artsakhis right now, and we've already established one major business, and we've got several more coming. We established a furniture factory for one of my dear friends who was our supplier of furniture in Artsakh for all of our work.
Yeah, so I wanted to ask you about that. What about businesses outside of just the families? And I'm sure these families were involved in certain types of businesses in Artsakh that lost pretty much everything. Uh-huh. How have you guys been involved with the business aspect of things, let's say with families or whatever, and have you guys been able to maybe get them restarted again in Armenia?
Mm-hmm. We are. We are, actually. The furniture factory has been working for 6 weeks now. We've given them over 15 orders already, and we've got another 30, 40 orders coming. It's just waiting. They're waiting in line. They can't keep up. They're working 7 days a week, literally 16-hour days.
Wow.
And he had 6 employees in Artsakh, okay? His factory did. And it was in downtown Stepanakert. Now he's got 9 employees, and he needs 6 more immediately. He can't keep up. we've got a shortage of, and our two rules when we started was they were all going to be Artsakhis, all the people who work there, mm-hmm. and we're going to take everything back to Artsakh when we re-liberate Artsakh.
Yeah.
So we're like, you know, we're so close to each other. We look at each other and say, okay, we're going to make this happen. We're going to be successful here. It's his business, by the way. It's not ours. We created everything. We basically purchased all the equipment for him, $27,000 worth of equipment, which is, you know, if you think about it, it's really not much.
It's not much, but I mean, no. It's a whole operation, though.
It's a whole operation. Yeah. And the next business is going to be a woodworking factory, which we're talking about right now. We're going to be financing that, and a countertop factory. So he's got two more ideas that we want to implement in the coming months. And so the woodworking, the factory he has now is all laminate work, and so it's not woodworking. Woodworking is different skills, different equipment. You guys know that.
We're
in the business. So. Anyway, so we've got several other businesses in the middle of being funded right now. I'd rather not get into the details until we do it. But literally in the next 2-3 weeks, we'll have two more businesses being funded.
Good.
And each one will have multiple families being supported by their business, by those businesses.
And the picture we have on the screen here, can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, that's a few weeks ago, the benefactor of the factory of this project, which great guy, Greg and Kelly, and their kids, they're in that picture, and they're from New Jersey. He was in Armenia. I took him to the factory. He donated the money for the factory, and I wanted him to see what we did with his money. And he keeps calling me and saying, you know, we want to do more. We want to help. And he was so uplifted.
So he donated the $27,000?
And then some. Yes, he
wow.
did.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, he's an Armenian-American, by the way, born in the U.S.
Yeah. See, the thing is, if you take it down to the small amounts, that's basically, let's say, 270 people, right, at $100.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Which is nothing.
You just put up a business.
Yeah. And you just put up a business for these people, not only for them to thrive, they're going to employ other Artsakhis, and they're going to help the Armenian economy.
Yep.
I mean, it's a trickle-down effect. It's beneficial in so many ways. And all you did was donate $100. That's 270 people from the, how many are in the diaspora?
Millions.
8 million or whatever.
8 million. 8 million. That's what and this is another picture with everybody who is working there now, correct?
Actually, there's a couple of people who didn't want to be in the picture when we took the picture. They were so shy. And then now he's hired three more people. So I think yesterday I was talking to him last night. He said he's in the middle of hiring two more people. They're gonna be 11 people. Hopefully today, tomorrow. That's, so it's just growing. It's growing like crazy. Hear. They can't keep up.
Yeah.
That's a really great story.
And this is what one of the other things is, like I said, by donating, you know, you guys are going to be able to do these projects, these businesses, agriculture, factories, whatever it is, especially in Armenia. Armenia, in my opinion, is lacking industrial, call it the industrial revolution. We need more factories to start producing woodworking, whatever it is, metallurgy, everything needs to be start getting back to, let's call it the Soviet era, when
production.
I want to thank again, it's just initials. I want to thank
Go.
I donated. I wish I had more money to support our heroes. I'm struggling myself here in the USA, currently disabled at 36 months ago and still recovering. We don't know what your name is, but thank you so much. See, people like this, we wish you health and a speedy recovery. Thank you so much for donating. Everybody else who's watching or will be listening, please, guys, donate, help. This is so important. Like Vigen said, we owe it. Oh, Grigor, his name is Grigor. Thank you, Grigor. We truly appreciate it. And, you know, you set an example right there on the live show, donating and supporting for a great cause. And one day, you're going to sit back and say, hey, that little donation I did, it helped. And, local, you know, again, the trickle-down effect, this is going to help his family, the people who are working there, their family, their kids are going to be able to have you know, bread on their table, be able to go to school, have the right supplies, and grow up and become great citizens of Armenia mm-hmm. and eventually back to their homeland.
And the strategy for me is like, this is, I mean, most NGOs do work, they, you know, it's charity work, but for me, for us, like Vegan mentioned it before, we sit down and we want to think about ideas where we can do something similar like this, because again, because of resources, because of money, we don't want to keep asking for money to give money.
Mm-hmm.
We want to build something like this where it sustains itself, it brings, it hires people.
Yeah,
it's, and it just keeps giving.
Basically, yeah. All we have to do is when we're there, we just go see them and be happy about it.
It's a well-oiled machine that keeps running and running and running. That's what it's about. One thing I know about when I first met you guys, shout out to the Wise Nuts. That's how I met you guys, Edgar, and you invited me to your home, and you guys were doing a little charity dinner and everything. You guys, you know, there's a lot of organizations out there who do galas and fundraising and this and that, and they bring in millions and millions of dollars. But I don't want to say there's nothing to show for, but you know, you guys are very humble, very quiet about what you're doing. Whatever amount that I've seen in the past, what, about 3 years I've known you now, proof, you guys get the work done. This is about, you guys have that responsibility that we need to make sure that the Artsakhis, before the blockade, before all that stuff, you guys were doing projects. You guys were the only ones during the blockade who were still doing projects in Artsakh.
I don't know about the only one. I can't speak for anybody else, but I can tell you that we were actively working on a daily basis.
During the blockade?
Yes.
During the blockade, that's what I'm talking about.
In fact, in March of 2023, this year, Artsakh Public TV did a piece on us because we were the only construction site in all of Artsakh. And I had 30 people working. So, because we had all the materials, all the supplies there already, including... steel and wood and everything. And up until the point where we were not, until in March, mid-March, basically, there was no more cement in Artsakh. So, and we couldn't get any more concrete, and then everything stopped. But up until then, even though from December on, most construction had stopped, even before December, most construction had stopped. But we kept going, and we were determined to go as long as possible. The only problem was there was no more cement left. So,
yeah.
But we have proven in the past, and we want to prove it again, that we're just as resilient as the people we help. And because, you know, people tell me this, and I've said this before, and I really want to get this message through. We absolutely have no right as Armenians, whether we live in Armenia or outside of Armenia, we have absolutely no moral right, no national right, no human right to get demoralized, to give up. Because the people who should be given up are not given up. Who are we to give up? You know, I mean, everybody we're talking about here, all these examples, these are people who should have given up a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't, and they are not today. And here we are, you know, we're talking about people. I talk to people here in the U.S. and friends, and I love these people, and I respect them, and they're very patriotic. But they're like, we're very demoralized, and we don't want to do anything. My answer to that is, but you have no right to say that. You know, if the person who should be demoralized, if the person who should have given up a long time ago is not, then the least you can do is support him, because he's the one fighting on the front line, whether it's the war, whether it's, you know, socioeconomic, whether it's family issues. These guys are still fighting today. Yeah. You know, we lost Artsakh, at least temporarily, but they're still fighting. These people are in the fight of their lives. And I don't think there's a single Armenian outside of the Artsakhis who has the right to say that they're demoralized and they no longer want to do anything. I don't think anyone has that right, and I'm saying this outright. So let's cut it. Let's cut it. I mean, let's not think that way anymore. We owe it to these to ourselves, to our nation, because history is going to judge us.
Of course,
what we do and how we react to this national calamity today.
Yeah.
And 20 years from now, 50 years from now, they're going to look back and say, you know, Armenians were resilient. They supported Artsakhis, and we rose. We rose again.
Yeah,
we rose from our ashes.
Yeah. You brought up a great point that I kind of segue to my next topic question, I guess you can call it. What as an organization, what are you guys doing as far as the moral support, the psychological support, the emotional support? Are there any programs you guys are putting together or planning to put together to, because, you know, it's one thing to help financially, but it's another thing to help the emotional spirit, stress that these people have gone through, and the psychological impact that has happened, affected them, and especially the children. You know, these kids are innocent. Some of them are, you know, so young that they have no idea what's going on. All of a sudden, they're hearing bombs and you know, fighting, and then next thing you know, they're on a 36-hour trip trying to escape to safety into Armenia proper. So, are there any type of programs you guys have or planning to do?
Programs as far as like psychological, like doctors and stuff.
Yeah.
But as far as for kids, actually, we had a program coming up last year where we were supposed to do it. We again was visiting Artsakh, came back, and it was supposed to go back before, and then the blockade happened. So we kind of came together and we continued that idea of doing the same project this year. And again, we'll give you more details about the upcoming event that we want to do.
We've never done formal psychological or any kind of psychological work or, you know, support. There are organizations that I know do that, and we commend them for that. In fact, I was talking to one of them today, one of the representatives, a U.S. organization, Armenian organization, who has been providing psychological support assistance. I think that the fact that, and this goes back to what I said earlier, the fact that we work with them on a daily basis, the fact that we're not only giving them financial support and socioeconomic support, but we're also working with them. We're these people's friends. We're in their families. We're in their homes. And that is the biggest psychological boost, psychological support they can ever get.
Yeah.
Going to the psychologist and sitting down an hour every other day and telling that person your stories and getting some support is good. But knowing that you've got people like us to back you up, knowing that there's someone you can always call and he'll be there for you. And that's what we are. We are the people that they can call, and we're there for them physically, not just on the phone, but physically. We drive to their homes. We sit down with them. We solve their problems, small problems, large problems. We listen to them. We hear them. They cry. They can cry on our shoulders. I mean, literally, we're these people's family.
Yeah.
And that is the biggest psychological support anyone can give anyone. And we've been doing that. We've been doing that since, you know, for the past 7-8 years. I've been involved in this in Artsakh for 25 years. So we haven't been able to do that to everybody, with everyone in all the Artsakhis. And we, like I said, we want to enlarge our circle. But at least the people we are working with, it is a very heavy engagement with them. So we know the families, the kids, the neighbors. We know these people. We know their history. We know what their needs are. They don't even have to tell us what they need. Literally, we call them and say, look, we know you need this, so we're going to take care of this. And what are you doing on Sunday? Let's sit down together. I mean, these people are coming to my house in Yerevan all the time, a lot of them. So a lot of them are our friends. So they have a network support that they wouldn't have imagined having. A lot of these people had never been to Armenia to Yerevan, I should say. They were in Armenia, obviously. Artsakh is Armenia. But and if they had been to Yerevan maybe a few times, maybe once every other year for a day or two, they really have no one in Yerevan. They don't know anybody, whether it's Yerevan or anywhere else for that matter. So wherever they live outside of Artsakh in Armenia today, they don't know anybody. So we're their support.
We did do we did do a gathering where we brought the Artsakhi families over to the complex that we have, and kind of put them together, have them enjoy the moment. I think we shared the video.
Yeah, also, we have a video I want to share of this event that you guys did. So, and this is at the complex at the apartment, right? The complex that you built. Yeah.
And we spent $0 on this event, by the way. Everything was donated.
It's great. Great. Արցախյան ավելի քան 70 ընտանիք տարբեր ծրագրերի շահառու է դարձել։ Շատերի համար տուն են վարձակալել, շատերի վարձակալության ծախսը փոխհատուցել, կենցաղային տեխնիկա ու կահույք ձեռք բերել։
Այդ ընտանիքներին մենք գեցավայրի եւ այսինքն ներքնակներից, մատրասներից մինչև վերմակները շատերի նաեւ առաջի օրերին սնունդ, շորեր, մարդիկ, որոնք ռոբեների ընթացքում իրանց տներից դուրս էին եկել։ Եվ մենք մարդիկ ոչնչով եկան Հայաստանի տարբեր մարզերը։ Եվ մենք ամեն ինչ անում ենք, որ անցած մի ամիսի եւ գալիք ամիսները այդ մարդիկ եւ ապահովված լինեն եւ նաեւ չմտածեն Հայաստանից դուրս գալու մասին։
Now, most of these families live in the building now, right?
Well, these specific families, there's 12 of them, live in our homes, actually. Myself and my partner, Hirach, we have homes in our building outside of our homes. And we had, you know, renters there, and we basically got rid of all of our renters and tenants and brought the Artsakhis in. So we're basically sheltering these people because they're our good friends, and they're all from Stepanakert. We can't put them in the remote villages, you know, they're city people. So, and every one of them is a good friend of mine. So, and it goes without saying, I welcomed all of these people in Goris and
Արցախում բազմաթիվ ծրագրեր է կենքի կոչել սատարեք մեր հերոսներին բարեգործական տեսարակական կազմակերպությունը եւ դեռ նորեր ներ ծրագրում։ Արցախի հայաթափումից հետո ծրագրերը շարունակում են Երևանում եւ մարզերում
ապաստանած։ Hotels for a night or two, and then they continued on to Yerevan to our building.
Yeah,
like all the other
places.
Կացարանով, սննդով, հագուստով ապահովելուց բացի, աշխատանքներ են տարվում բռնի տեղահանված արցախահայությանը նաև աշխատանքով ապահովելու ուղղությամբ։ Որպես օրինակ, արդեն մատնանշվում է Արցախում կահույքի գործարան կորցրած Կայ Սարգսյանի գործարանի վերստեղծումը։
Բարերար Գրեգ Պադիշխանյանի նվիրատչյան, անձնել նվիրատչյան շնորհիվ, thank you Greg. Եվ Գրեգի ուրեմն նվիրատչյունների շնորհիվ մենք կարողացանք մեր Ստեփանակերտի սիրելի ընկերոջ Կայ Սարգսյանի գործարանը, որ ինքը գործեց Ստեփանակերտում, Գավիկի գործարանը, որը իմիջի այլոց մատակարարում էր մեր բոլոր գավիկները Արցախում մեր բարեկարգական ծրագրերում։ Մենք արդեն ստեղծել ենք ԿԱՅ-ի համար նոր գործարան, և ԿԱՅ-ը և 7 այլ արցախցիներ, այս պահին 8 արցախցիներ, երիտասարդներ գործ ունեն, աշխատանք ունեն, և 5-րդ մասիվում արդեն գործարանը սկսել է իր աշխատանքները, և առաջի արտադրանքը արդեն 2 շաբաթվա մեջ կտեսնեն։
Հայաստանում բնակվող Լիբանանահայ Մհեր Զատուրյանի եւ Միացյալ Նահանգներում բնակվող Լիբանանահայ Շանթ Կարապետյանի համատեղ ջանքերով Արցախցի կանանց 220 զույգ կոշիկ է նվիրաբերվել։ Ժանս Բիստրոյի սեփականատերեր Վիգեն եւ Մարիա Քապլանյաների սիրահուժեր կամփով ծանոթության երեկոյի սնունդը տրամադրվել։ Սատարենք մեր հերոսներին բարեգործական հասարակական կազմակերպությունը ամեն ինչ անելու է արցախցիներին հայրենի հողում պահելու համար։ Աշխատում են Արցախ նորից վերադառնալու երազանքն արդեն նպատակ դարձրած, ու այդ նպատակի իրականացման համար ջանքերն այստեղ չեն խնայվում։
Մենք համարում ենք, որ սա հայրենիք է, բայց եւ այնպես արցախցին պատկանում է Արցախում։ Եվ այն ինչպես ավարտանում վերջը մենք վերանվաճելու ենք եւ վերազանգել։ Ես հավատում եմ։
Սատարենք մեր հերոսներին բարեգործական հասարակական կազմակերպության նախագահ Վիգեն Արաբյանի խոսքով արցախցիներին օգնելու բազմաթիվ գաղափարներ ու նպատակներ կան։ Դրանք կյանքի կոչելու համար բարերարների օգնությանն է ապավինում։ Աշխատանքները շարունակվում են ամեն օր, նպատակը մեկ արցախցու կյանք ավելի լավը դարձնելն է։
All right, so, well, that was a great event you guys put together. I don't know.
Having a loss for words.
Oh, yeah, I'm just, you know, you want to do so much. You want to do so much to help them. Like you said, the entire Armenian diaspora nation, I don't care where you are in the world, we owe it to these people. I mean, what they've gone through, we need to, I don't know. It sometimes it's too much. Sometimes you're trying to take it all in and seeing the face of these kids, these women, everything they've gone through, it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. And, it's our responsibility. Like you said, you know, we owe it to them. But
you know, your thought occurred to me earlier. You guys were talking about how it's really important to try to get these families to stay in Armenia, right? Even though they're out of Artsakh and whatnot, I'm sure eventually, as more time goes by, they're gonna have, or you guys might, or they might face some challenges with possibly preserving their heritage, culture, history, and whatnot. Are there any efforts ongoing or plans for any efforts to kind of preserve that for them as time moves forward?
As a matter of fact, there are. We are working with several leaders of the Artsakh government, and as well as just other people, other Artsakhis, not necessarily government officials, and we're right now working on a plan to basically help keep that cultural identity, whether it's the kind, the Artsakhi kind, whether it's the dialect, whether mm-hmm. it's the history, the new history, the old history, the 3,000-year-old history, and whether it's the basically the awareness of the right to return, and the will to fight and really liberate Artsakh. All of that, we have to pass it on to our kids.
Yeah,
we all hope that we don't have to pass it on to our kids, that we're going to be able to re-liberate it before that time comes. But we need to be ready for that. Otherwise, we're going to lose the new generation. After all, Artsakh is Artsakhis.
Yeah,
is the Artsakhi. Without the Artsakhi, there is no Artsakh. And that was the case even when we did have control over Artsakh. So this isn't about any country, you know, it's not the country is not the land and the rivers and the lakes and the beautiful mountains. It's the people, and of course, the people can stay can keep their identity if they're in that land. So the land is just as important. But at the same time, we have a golden opportunity now to devise programs and implement programs to keep the Artsakhis, mm-hmm. because they're not in the diaspora; they're in Armenia, and Artsakh has always been Armenia, is Armenia today. And we temporarily lost control over it. And as you know, maybe unimaginable as this might sound, I strongly believe, I believe that we will have the opportunity to re-liberate Artsakh, but we're only going to be able to liberate it again if we deserve to liberate it. And we lost it because we didn't deserve it. I also believe that. But when we do deserve it, and the time will come and we will deserve it, we will be able to liberate it. Things change. Politics change. The world changes.
Yes, it does.
A lot has happened in the world in the past 100 years that we could have never imagined would have happened. And liberating Artsakh is definitely not something that's unattainable.
No.
But we need to be ready for that. We need to have the new generation be ready for that. So we'll make the announcements when the time comes. We are working on some plans. We're even, for example, not specifically about those plans, but we're even talking to, right now we're in discussions with an Artsakhi, basically widower, whose husband was martyred in 2020, and she wants to establish a, what do you call them, the kid centers, you know, what do you call them here in the U.S.?
Like a youth center.
It's a youth center, but it's for kids from 6 to 16-year-old kids, and they go, it's an after-school program where they go there and they... their
activities and whatnot.
Activities and some more schooling, and maybe.
Tutoring, so forth.
Activities. And that's going to be for Artsakhs. It's going to be by Artsakhis for Artsakhi kids. We want to bring the Artsakhi kids together every day. We want to keep that community going, and we want to make sure they're friends with each other, and they share each other's culture with each other. So we want to start that program pretty soon, and we're in discussions right now on that too. But other than that, we're also in discussions on other programs. So it's a little bit too early to be outspoken about it, but we are definitely aware of that.
There's movement.
And we are talking to some of our larger benefactors and other organizations, other NGOs as well, to bring programs and finance programs and to be able to keep the Artsakhis.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's so important. You mentioned like working with other NGOs. Like I said, Hike from Our Heroes. I know Tavit, you've spoken to him before, and Fred from Veterans of Armenia. I think one of the key thing is, because a lot of these families, Martakert or Martum, wherever they were from, these villages, they know each other. So it's key to keep them together, close to one another, so they can almost build a little community themselves within wherever they're staying in Armenia. It doesn't matter what region, but I think that's very important. That's how to preserve their cultural heritage, their ways of life, their dialect, mm-hmm. And also to the kids who are the little ones who are growing up, is to make sure that they know their history of Artsakh. Artsakh has always been somewhat independent from Armenia, throughout, even though it's been part of Armenia, but it's been always had its independence, nice. You know. So it's key to teach the youth about why their Artsakh is so special and the importance of it. I want to get into a little bit of the political side of things. Your organization, obviously, the stance is you know. We look at it as now the illegal occupation of Artsakh by Azerbaijan. That's how we see it. Those are our lands. The biggest problem we see is always, you know, the legal mumbo jumbo, which, you know, people tend to forget about history. And you know, him and I always talk about it. You know, yes, maps change, things change, but reality is Artsakh has been
inhabited.
By Armenians, always been Armenia, from the Khachkars, from the churches, from all this stuff. What do you, and again, you don't have to go get too deep into it, but I want to talk about, when we talk about the failure of what happened, what are your opinions from the past government to the current government, and what is your stance? What do you guys think were the mistakes, and what are you seeing any mistakes now that is going to prevent from the getting Artsakh back, have it be liberated, and what do you think that the goal should be? Because you know, let's say, do we want to go back and liberate it with war, or do we want to liberate it in a different way, more of a legal way? Because with war, it's a vicious cycle that will continue for generations to come, right?
It is, yeah. I mean, obviously, legal way, we do have the, if we go back in history, we do have the proof that those are our lands.
Yeah.
Sadly, because of mistake of handling the situation, the documentation, it became part of, you know, given to mm-hmm. Azerbaijan. And then when we became independent, we kind of, the paperwork again, we screwed it up, and we were considered aggressors. But a legal way is the will be a better way, obviously. Mm-hmm. But it comes down to money. I mean, currently, obviously, Azerbaijan has more money, deep pockets. Doesn't matter. It's the UN, EU, whoever it is. It's controlled by them, basically.
They've bought off more people.
Yeah. As far as going back to your question about whose fault it is, yeah, we can blame all the governments, past, prior, now, current. But kind of like in the last 3-4 years, well, I've known vegan for about 15 years, but more or less about the last 5-6 years, I realized that I'm part of the mistake too. I'm part of the problem too. And I feel like all the Armenians are. It's not just the governments that failed it. We all failed. I failed. I thought I did a lot, but I didn't do nothing because all of us could have done a little bit more. The smallest thing if we could have done, as a, we always say, you know, we have a big diaspora, 8 million people outside. But what do? I mean, sometimes I see, and I don't want to get into too much of this, what's happening, but sometimes I see some events that happen in LA and the money that's spent on those events. I'm like, really? You know, like, come on. But then when you tell them, let's do this work over here, this project, it becomes again, oh, like you said, fatigued. People don't want to get into it. So I feel like in the last 30 years ago, I was a little kid, but at least since I've been an adult, what have I done? So I blame myself. We all have a portion of blame, basically, as an Armenian community. In Armenia or outside of Armenia. Obviously, the governments have their own blame also, bigger blame. But in my opinion, we all have to be blamed for the loss of Artsakh. But let's again get into it more.
Well, first of all, we are not a political organization. And although every one of our members and volunteers has the right to and does have, most probably does have, an opinion about where we are today and why we are here today, including myself. And during my life, I've been outspoken at times about it. But as I've always said, we believe, and I've told every one of our members who have joined us, including Edgar, when he was joining us, I've told him, you know, we are all about Artsakh. Everything we do is in Artsakh, and now it's for Artsakhis, and that includes Artsakhis' right of self-determination. And we realize that for the 28 years plus we were in control of Artsakh, we basically did 2% of what we should have done.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm not talking about percentages here. I'm talking about as a nation and also as the governments, successive governments of Armenia. And, you know, the government of Artsakh was basically a district of Armenia. So I can't speak of the government of Artsakh. I mean, it was more of a formality, including, the government and the parliament and all that. And to me, that was a formality. I never considered Artsakh to be a country. I personally never considered Artsakh to be a country. I've been very outspoken about it, and I've told Artsakhis that it's a district of Armenia, it's a region of Armenia, and I've called the president of Artsakh the Marsbet of Artsakh. I've always been very outspoken about that. And there was a reason why I was that way, because we failed, first of all, in conveying the message to our new generation 25 years ago that Artsakh is Armenia. And as a result, Artsakh was never treated as part of Armenia. Artsakh was treated as another Armenian land, as another historic Armenian land, as another land we have the right to live on,
mm-hmm.
but was never treated as an undeniably inseparable part of Armenia. And every successive government, including the heads of government, including all the illegally so-called elected, you know, two regimes, three regimes that we had before this last government, every one of them basically treated Artsakh as a foreign Armenian land. And that was the message we gave to our population. That was the message, you know, we always said Artsakh and Armenia. And I always rejected that notion. I rejected that terminology. I said Armenia, including Artsakh. And if you look at some of the interviews and some of the, words that I've spoken in the past, you'll see that every time, go back 25 years, you go back, I've said that. some of the interviews I was given in Southern Artsakh in the 90s. I was doing the same thing in the 2000s. I was doing the same thing. We've always, you know, rejected the notion that Artsakh is a separate country. And we've always embraced the idea that Artsakh is Armenia. And if we believe that today, which we do, if we all believe that today, then we need to fight for Artsakh as we would fight for Yerevan, as we would fight for any other part of Armenia today. And fight could mean anything. And they took it away from us by force, and they deserve to be taken away by force again. I'm not advocating violence. I'm not at all. What I am saying is, if the time comes when we need to take it back by force, we have the right to, you know, because we've been attacked, and it's our land, mm-hmm. It's Armenia.
Yeah.
And that's the point I've been trying to make for the past 2 minutes is yes, it is Armenia. And the Armenian people have the right to take Artsakh back from the foreign aggressors. And today might not be the right time to do that. We all know that. And I'm not going to comment on where, you know, the politics is today for Armenia, but I can tell you, we reject every notion, including today's government's stance, that Artsakh is not Armenia and Artsakh is Azerbaijan. We've denied that. We've neglected or basically rejected that idea for 25 years, and we're going to keep rejecting it today. So we reject what the Armenian government is doing today in terms of accepting Artsakh as part of Azerbaijan. And as I told you at the beginning of this discussion, we're not politicians, so I'm giving you a straight answer to a straight question.
And that's what we want to hear.
I'm not playing with words here.
Yeah.
We do not accept what the government is doing, and we're going to keep fighting to keep Artsakh in everybody's hearts and minds, and until the day, as I said, comes when we as a nation, as a country, deserve to get Artsakh back. Unfortunately, I'm the first person to say that we really didn't deserve Artsakh. As much as it was ours, as much as it is not Azerbaijan, we did a horrible job of maintaining
yeah.
what we liberated with our brothers and sisters' blood. And we, you know, the sacrifice was huge in the 90s to basically liberate Artsakh. And liberation stopped the day the war stopped. And we didn't realize that we've got to keep liberating it every yeah. morning. And we're going to keep liberating Artsakh through the Artsakhis in Armenia today, tomorrow, next year, the year after. That's our plan. And we're going to keep the Artsakhis hearts and minds alive. And until the day comes when we are ready to go back, and we will go back by any means, we will. And they did it by any means, and we deserve the right. We have the right, and we deserve to take it back. And
yeah.
We hope that not a single drop of blood is going to be shed for that. And I'm not advocating that at all. But fact is, countries are formed by wars. And the world's map is, it's reshaped by wars. And
yes.
It's unfortunate. We don't want that, but we will do what's necessary when the time comes, and we're gonna get it back. And let's be ready for it. Let's be ready to keep Armenia strong, and make Armenia strong, and let's be ready for liberating Artsakh when the time comes.
Yeah, you brought out some amazing points, and you know, we've talked about this before, and I've mentioned it before. The biggest problem, the beginning of the problem, was when during the independence of Armenia that we adopted the wrong map. The other thing is Artsakh having its own separate flag, which was the separation right there. Like you said, it's a region, just like Syunik, just like Lodi region. It's a region of Armenia. That was where the problem was. But I agree. We should never give up. And it's always been Armenia. It will be Armenia. I don't care. You know, the thing is, the Azeris can try to falsify as much as they want. They can, but the truth always comes out. The truth always comes out. They can do their propaganda as much as they want. The world knows the truth. The politics that's being played right now, we might not understand it. We're not involved. We don't know what's going on behind the doors, what deals are being made, whatever. But one thing is for sure, Artsakh has always been part of Armenia,
yeah.
and will always be in our hearts. And like you said, the day will come, maybe not tomorrow, maybe not in 2 years, maybe not in 5 years, but the day will come where either by force or by, you know, the legal way you want to call it, it will be part of Armenia again. And I believe in that.
I do want to add one more thing to the thoughts I expressed is the fact that if Armenia is a democratic country today, and there's a lot of arguments about that, but that's why I said if, it's a very relative term, then we have the right to express our opinion and have our opinion and express it, which is what we're doing.
Yeah.
So we, as members of the organization and as the organization itself, we do not accept what's going on today in Armenia in terms of the approach or the treatment of the Artsakh's cause. And we're gonna stand by on our ground, and we're gonna keep fighting for what's right for Artsakh. And we do believe that the majority of the population is in agreement with us. But we also understand that it's a very volatile situation. I mean, the government of Armenia today has a serious task of protecting what's left of Armenia without Artsakh. But we're not the government. We're an NGO, and we're citizens. So we have the right to express our opinion, and we will, and we are. So we hope that that doesn't change the fact that we said the same thing about the previous regimes also, when they basically spent 25, 30 years basically destroying what we liberated, And I mean, the number of people living in Artsakh and the conditions they were living in was just unimaginable. I mean, that was not definitely the land of our dreams. That was definitely not the dream life that we dreamt of having in our historic Artsakh, in our historic Shushi. So we did a horrible job of owning, taking ownership of our liberated territories in Artsakh, all of Artsakh, and perhaps that's why we lost it. And that doesn't change the fact that we still are the legal owners of those lands. And I don't mean that in terms of deeds. I mean that in terms of national rights.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I believe that the time will come when we will be able to re-liberate it. But at the same time, I mean, the people who took over Artsakh by force, they're not even a nation. I mean, Azerbaijan is a made-up country. And, if you think about it, I mean, these guys, they were there at the right time and they ended up with a lot of oil and gas.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine, but oil and gas isn't gonna last forever. And history has proven that oil and gas is not everything.
Yeah, historically, that's not even theirs. So, but not to
whole different story for another time. Story,
yeah.
I just want to add one thing again, even though I said it earlier. Again, we need to work, all of us. We cannot. I know a lot of people in the diaspora, we point fingers at the government, point fingers at this and that, and we complain and we whine. Oh, this didn't get done, or oh, we gave money to here and this didn't get done. Let's not stop whining. Let's just work. We all need to work.
You're talking about the diaspora. How has the diaspora been involved with you guys? What kind of efforts have they put forth or has aided with you guys? I mean, besides donating money, are there any, I guess, boots on the ground or anything that they're getting physically involved with? And if you can, from what parts of the world?
I can't say that the diaspora has been boots on the ground active with us for the most part. There's been instances where some of our volunteers have come, friends, volunteers, mm-hmm. and have helped us on the ground. But for the most part, it's us in Armenia. And that's okay. Because, at the end of the day, you can't save Armenia from LA.
Yeah.
But there's a lot that can be done. But the work is actually being done in Armenia. And when I say Armenia, including Artsakh, and that's just the way it's always been, and we got to keep doing what we do. But we are nothing without the support of the diaspora. I mean, 99% of our income, of our donations, come from the diaspora. The vast majority of it is from the U.S., but also a good part from Europe, and from various countries in Europe, including Switzerland, Paris, France, and we appreciate every dime they give us. We're basically dependent on the $1 donation, on the $10, $100, $10,000 donation. Every single donation that's made to us is going directly towards the programs that we implement. We're all volunteers, have always been, my entire life I've been, you know, volunteering for Artsakh. It's always been a volunteer, you know, even though, you know, there's ways to get things done, but this is the path we've chosen for our organization. We don't have an office. My business office in Yerevan is the organization's office. So, and we have no employees, and we, you know, it's hard because we can't, there's a limit to what we can do. We know that, but we're stressing ourselves these days, and it's been very hard on us, but we do what we have to do. And again, the more financial support we get, the easier it'll be for us to implement those projects.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
I want to thank, Abiding in Truth. She just donated as well. So, thank you so much. We appreciate that. Again, those of you who might be watching live or listening to us later in the future, or watching us later, we get it. Some people, you know, it's a Thursday night. Those of you who have kids or have a job tomorrow, you need to go to sleep early. It's not that late, but still, you know, donate, help this great organization. And like I said, you saw the videos, you saw the results of what they're doing and helping the Artsakhis feel at home in Armenia, get them back on their feet until the time comes for them to return to their rightful lands and get their homes back. We're getting close to the end of the show, but I wanted to give both of you a moment to kind of final thoughts, a final message to everybody out there who's going to be watching and listening to us. We can start with you, Edgar.
Final thoughts. Again, I want to repeat myself. It's, we've lived in the last at least 3 years. We've gone through crazy times, all of us. Times where we didn't even sleep over here in the diaspora in LA. We would just sit up and just wait for the next news to come up. And we've been through the ups and the downs. We get hyped up. We, you know, we open our wallets. We donate. Then we go into our old regular daily lifestyle, and we forget about things. But my message is just keep doing what you're going to do. When something bad happens and we're all active, just try to stay active like that. And it's our organization or whoever organization you believe in, stay active. And you don't have to. Some people, I've talked to a lot of people individually, and I give them stories. And I say, when you complain about, oh, I give money to this organization, they didn't do nothing, you can do it yourself. You visit Armenia. You can go do the smallest thing in Armenia and make a difference. So let's not be a country or people of whiners. Let's be people of
blaming one another.
Yeah. Let's do work. Let's just do work. If you can do it physically, you want to donate to our cause, and we can do it, hey, thank you, guys. You can come and see it when you visit Armenia. But if you can do it on your own, even more power to you. Go do it on your own.
Be involved.
Yeah, just be involved. That's all I can say.
You know, as a former diaspora Armenian, I want to say that I do understand the level of disappointment or the feelings many diasporans have today about the situation in general in Armenia today and the past several years. After so many years of winning, so many years of hope, we are in some of the worst times in our nation's history today. But at the same time, I'm going to repeat myself for the sake of repeating myself. We absolutely have no right to be disappointed. Neither myself nor any diaspora Armenian. And I can tell you that compared to the average diaspora in Armenian, I've seen a lot more. Having lived in Armenia and having gone through wars but even I'm not disappointed. I cannot be disappointed. I cannot let myself down. And we as a nation have absolutely no right to let ourselves down today. And this is the time where we really need to pick ourselves up, because they need us more than ever. The Artsakhis need us more than ever. Artsakh, the land, needs us more than ever. So let's not regret not being the exemplary Armenian 20 years from now, because our kids are going to judge what we do, what we say, and what we do today. And let's be the best we can be as Armenians. Let's support every single bit of good deed that's done for Artsakh, including our organization or any other good organization. There's a lot of them out there. And be active, live Armenia every day, Don't be part-time Armenians. I know it's hard to be full-time Armenians in the diaspora. I know that. But, you know, read something about Armenia every day. Be involved in with Armenia. Talk to your friends in Armenia if you have friends. Just stay in touch, because by staying in touch, you've got your finger on the pulse, mm-hmm. and you're going to feel our pain in Armenia. You're going to feel our needs in Armenia. And you're going to basically no longer be disconnected from what we go through every day in Armenia. So, and let's just act as a nation. Let's start act as a nation where that basically makes its country, not its food, not its, you know, dialects, not its culture, not its songs, not its dances. Its country. The country is the center of everything we do, and that country is ours. Finally, after 7 years, we liberated that country. It's ours. Let's take possession of that country. Let's be Armenians. Let's be Armenian citizens. Even if you don't have a passport in your hand, all of us.
Well said, Vigan. Yeah. Well said, Alpris. Well, everybody, so as we mentioned, go ahead and if whatever means you can, whatever small amount you can, donate to this organization. They're doing amazing work. Support our heroes.am, or you can scan the QR code and it'll take you to the donate page. Whatever you can, it's the holidays, season of giving. They have a lot of projects they're working on, and they need all the funds they can get to see these programs through. So, gentlemen, I want to thank you so much for being here tonight with us. Vigan, thank you for everything you're doing. I personally know how dedicated you are to Artsakh, the Artsakhis. And, you know, there's so much we can talk about. And you never boast about it. You know, you're always so humble about it, and you've done so much work. You've put so much sweat and tears into the past 25 years of your life, dedicated to Artsakh and Artsakhis. And, we are thankful for you and people like you and Edgar for everything you guys are doing. And keep on doing what you're doing, because you motivate people like us and people who are watching us, listening to us, to get up and do something. Like Edgar said, it's not just about donating money. It's about being involved, doing something. You yourself can go in Armenia and do something, help the Artsakhi kids, you know, create a program. It doesn't take much, guys. You just have to do it. You just have to get out of that comfort zone in the diaspora and go do something. And trust me, at the end, you're going to feel amazing, amazing because of what you're doing and honey, you're helping these people have support, have some kind of a backbone, somebody behind them supporting them. So again, thank you so much. Thank you for being part of the show tonight. Thank you for everything you guys are doing. Yeah.
Thanks for supporting us, guys. Mike, Vic. I mean,
anytime.
Getting our message through to the diaspora is through guys like you people. You guys are the best in what you do, and that's why I came back, and I consider you guys my friend beyond doing what we're doing. And thanks to you guys, we're getting our message out, and we wouldn't be able to do it without you guys. So thank you.
Pleasure. You know, our platform is not just about talking about history. It's to spread the awareness of everything.
Armenia.
Yeah, all things Armenia. That's what it's about. Yeah. So and for other cultures to see what Armenia is about, what Armenians are about, and get them involved, have them help as well. So. All right, everyone. I want to thank all of you for joining us. Again, please support. You can click on the link in the body of the video, or when you're listening to the podcast, and support our Heroes Armenia organization. I don't know if we'll be back with another episode next week. We might. We'll see how our schedules. We're both busy. It's the holidays. But if we don't, I want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. We might be able to sneak in an episode,
we'll say it again.
We'll see. So again, thank you for joining us. Make sure you follow us on Instagram at MedHedosned. Support the show if you like what we're doing. Go to patreon.com/MedHedosned. Any small amount helps. So you can become a Patreon at $5 a month, buying us a coffee once a month. That's how we see it. And yeah, if you guys want to buy the sculptures, they're great gifts. You can go to medhedosno.com, purchase the sculptures, gift it to your family member or friend who is a diehard Armenian history fanatic like us. But besides that,
I want to add something to that. I mean, I've gifted
to a lot of people,
and it's the best gift people receive. They're just amazed by it, they love it. So sometimes, especially for guys, I mean, sometimes you go, you don't know what to buy, a clone, this, that, it's whatever. But you buy one of the sculptures, and they open the box, they love it. So I've given it maybe 4 or 5 people already, and then
I know. Sometimes I'm like, Edgar, stop.
I've seen the name come up, and I'm like, damn, we bought another one.
Yeah, but thank you for doing that. We appreciate it. And then the sculpture we unveiled, which is Haik Nahapet, we will have it ready for pre-order next week. And again, we will give you guys the details how that's going to work, because it's going to be selling batches and everything. But all right, enough of promoting us. So as we always say at the end of every show, respect one another,
love one another,
and till the next episode, take care of yourselves.